Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by SuperValu Insurance, looking out for you and yours with our new life and mortgage protection insurance.
Well, actor Tom Vaughan Lawler, best known here for playing Nidge in Love Hate, he's two new films coming out this month. The first, with Eclipse Pictures, is called Baltimore, and it's about the English heiress Rose Dugdale, who masterminded the Rossborough House art heist in 1974. In the second film, The Beautiful Game for Netflix, he plays a goalie in the Homeless World Cup, and I'm delighted to say that Tom joins me now from his home in Kent. Morning, Tom.
Good morning, Miriam. Thank you for having me on.
So nice to chat and catch up with you. Lots to talk about. Listen, remind listeners first about Rose Dugdale. Imogen Poots plays her in this movie, Baltimore. She plays her really well. And about how she masterminded the Rossborough art robbery. Remind her of her.
Yes. So Rose Dugdale, I was going to say was, she's still alive, but was in terms of her past life, she was an English aristocratic debutante who transformed her life into a right-wing or a Marxist IRA soldier. Mm-hmm. So she goes from her life in Devon to Oxford University, and she was radicalized in visits to Cuba and Northern Ireland. And in the early 70s, she masterminded and undertook this audacious robbery at Rossborough House, stealing masterpieces of Vermeer, Goya, Rubens. And the kind of one of the fascinating things about it that I didn't know was that it wasn't an operation that was sanctioned by, say, the Army Council. It was a renegade mission. And so she undertook this audacious kind of extraordinary heist. And our film is centered around that moment in her life, really.
And who do you play? Tell me about your character, Tom.
I play Dominic. So the cell that that undertook the operation were led by Rose and three IRA men. And so I'm one of the one of her associates, one of the cell, and we take the paintings and then retreat to this hideout in the woods. And it's not a standard biopic. It's not a kind of cradle to the grave biopic. It's a There are flashbacks and contextualized moments of her early life, her life in England, her parents trying to pass her off as a debutante and her resistance to that, her radicalization in Oxford University. And our film predominantly jumps between the heist and the aftermath, the time period, the 10 days she spent in the cottage after the heist. And that's how it's intercut.
And those two men, one of whom you are, of course, Dominic and Martin, and there was obviously Rose Dugdale and Eddie Gallagher. Those two guys, one of whom you play, they were never caught and charged, were they, Tom?
No, they were never caught. They were never identified. They don't know who they are. And so Joe and Christine, our directors, they're an imagining of those two men. And what they are used as slightly in the film is a kind of a counterpoint to Rose in the cottage. So they retreat to this cottage and they debate art and faith and identity and class and politics. And they create their own art gallery in the house. So they have these, it's kind of extraordinary. They have these masterpieces and they have them placed around this rustic cottage and they've got their own private art gallery, and they're liberating these paintings from the private ownership, from the context of art galleries. And it's funny because, you know, art has always been this platform, this site for protest. It's happening now with Extinction Rebellion. It's always been a site for protest. So it's funny, like when we were holding the paintings, they weren't the originals. They were amazing prints. And even though we were endowing them as the originals, in between takes, it's a very funny thing. Out of context, you feel like a great, your relationship to that art outside of the context of a sanitized version in an art gallery, it's a totally different thing. And how people relate to art, what art means to them, who owns art. And I think as well, for Rose, the incredible thing was, you know, it was, the paintings were stole as leverage for the repatriation of the Price sisters from prison in England back to Northern Ireland. And of course, Marion and Dolores were artists themselves and didn't want the paintings destroyed. So that must have been an incredibly confronting moment for her. She was also pregnant, so there's like another kind of silent member of that house who she is also debating with. And the mix in the cottage is a strange kind of, it's a kind of a strange place where they're trying to figure out what they want to do, who they are, what art means, what politics means. And Joe and Christine have done brilliantly in kind of framing it as a heist movie, the thriller of a heist movie coupled with questions about art and life and society.
No, I think it's a really good film. And as I said earlier, Imogen Poots, she's very good at portraying a rose. Yeah. What I thought was very good and interesting as well, Tom, and I would ask you about this is, you know, they portray her as she was complicated, you know, and the fact that she was willing and able to commit violence. They even show the scene where she robbed her own parents' home. Was that important to you, Tom, that kind of balanced portrayal that she was not glorified?
Yeah, totally. It's this remarkable journey and this remarkable character and this remarkable personality, a singular, extraordinary, audacious, bold act taken by this extraordinary person. But there was never a sense where we're going, this woman is a hero, this woman is a villain. It's just portraying this this individual who went on this incredible journey and who, you know, sold her house in Chelsea and gave the proceeds to the poor and to other social movements she felt strongly about. And if you pitch this as a fiction film, people go, it's unbelievable. And that's why it's so extraordinary that it's all true. But the heist in itself is an audacious work of art. It's an extraordinary kind of performance in itself. None of the men wore balaclavas. She went in this kind of heightened French accent and this kind of bonkers wig. And it's terrifying for the people who were involved. But I got the impression that the kind of the audacity of the heist itself was a performance in its own right and a kind of an art gesture in its own strange way. But it, she was singular and extraordinary. I mean, I say was, she's still alive. So it's that in itself is an extraordinary thing.
Yeah, I was saying that to my producer earlier. Like, I think she's in an older person's home with nuns somewhere. She could even be listening, Tom.
Yes. And of course,
she was pregnant as well with Eddie Gallagher's child, but she hadn't told him. And when she went to prison, I don't think she even told the prison guard she was pregnant.
Right. Well, they got married in prison. I didn't realise they were the first prisoners to be married in prison, in Limerick prison. I didn't know that. But that legacy, I'm sure, for that child is an incredibly complicated one. But I think that's what's clever again in the film is that, you know, she is pregnant and I know about it in the cottage, the others don't. But like we've got this weird relationship in the cottage. It's like these strange roles where she's the provider, she goes out, we cook the dinner. She, you know, we're all kind of in love with her. We're all afraid of her. She's English. Who is she? You know, and her identity is always shifting. And she's our teacher and our leader. And it's a kind of a strange mix. And she has debates with her own child. And she's, you know, there's amazing moments. She says, you know, it might come to the point where we have to destroy these paintings. And if it comes to that point, I will. And I say to her, I don't doubt that for a second. Because I know the kind of person she is. And the paintings mean so much to her, but she's willing to destroy them. And it's an extraordinary, extraordinary moment.
And I know you were working with reproductions, obviously, of the paintings, but because they were so valuable, they were so beautiful. As you said, Marion and Douglas Price, they didn't want them destroyed. But did it shock you a bit that she was willing to destroy these paintings?
Well, she loved the paintings. They were dear to her. She understood their artistic, cultural value. And she saw that as liberating them from private ownership. And as I say, you know, placing them around the cottage as a kind of a private art gallery and debating the paintings and their context and their politics was important to her. But the idea of art, as I say, as a site for protest is age old, has always been. And who knows, but I wonder about the artists themselves, if they had any idea that their paintings were still being debated in these ways. I would find it fascinating because that's what art is about. It's about provoking debate. And that's what's extraordinary about the audacity of that that she was holding these priceless paintings as hostage. It's incredible.
We're going to take a clip, actually, Tom. This is outside the cottage when Rose Dugdale decides to send you, Dominic and Martin, to the safe house where Eddie Gallagher is holed up.
I think the three of us being here is a mistake. We make too big of a target. I think you should take the car early tomorrow morning and go and join Eddie at the safe house in Baltimore.
Was it our uninformed comments about the aesthetic value of art?
It'll be safer.
Maybe you're right. Maybe.
Can I ask why?
Woman in the shop, the way she looked at me, the way she talked to me. That man Donal.
Oh, so you do think he suspects something?
Possibly.
Well?
When I met him, I may have spoken in a French accent. In French, even.
Was that a fact?
Did he spot it?
I'm not sure. I have to pay him a visit.
That might get messy.
I need you two to get some shovels. Dig a grave. Here. Not too deep.
Terrifying. Did you have any concern at all, Tom, about playing an IRA guy? About you live in Kent, how it might be perceived in Kent?
No, it's funny, you know, I've lived in England now 24 years and the thing that continually surprises me is about the average English person's vagueness about the Irish situation. Mm. I still find that kind of mind-blowing to me, that they're very vague about their history, their colonial history. And once upon a time in Northern Ireland, when that was on the BBC, it had a huge impact here. And a lot of people, friends of mine, English friends, were kind of astonished by it and were talking to me about it in the street and going, I can't believe that was what it was like. And this, and I was like, yeah, you know, and so I'm still struck by the vagueness of it. So whenever I tell anyone I'm playing an IRA character, they're always, oh, right. Oh, that thing, you know, it's still a kind of a vague, I feel like the average person in the street has a vague grasp of the politics of that. So I just find that strange, to be honest. 24 years here, I still find that kind of confusing that they're so vague about their own history.
Yeah, that is so true. Now, the other movie you've coming up at the end of the month is The Beautiful Game. We're going to take a clip from this as well, Tom. It's the manager played by Bill Nighy. He's trying to get star player Vinny to the Homeless World Cup.
This competition brings us all together. A second chance to be part of the team.
You represent the potential that sport has to build a better world.
Come to Rome.
I can't.
I think you can.
It's like a proper international football competition.
Sorry, I thought I made that clear.
Get a ball, you pass it to me.
I'm sick of this. Thinking you're better than us just because you can kick a ball.
I'm not better than you, is that what you're saying?
Everyone has a reason for being here. And every player has a story to tell.
You play the goalie, Tom. This is a real feel-good film, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a really amazing story about the Homeless World Cup was a charity that was set up in the late 90s by Mel Young. It's a charity that advocates for a global solution to homelessness. And it's a real competition that takes place around the internationally where homeless people, people who've been homeless, people who are refugees, people who've had substance addiction issues, they are chosen to represent their country in this international football competition. And our story is Bill Nighy plays a manager and he picks like five players to represent England at the Homeless World Cup in Rome. And we all go to Rome to represent England.
Are you any good at soccer, by the way?
Well, I'm not as good as I thought I was. Let's say that there's a line early in the film where it says no one beats Kevin in goal. And it wasn't until I watched the final film that I realized they were being ironic. And I think I conceived like four goals in the trailer alone. So I was like, oh, right. But I was older by 20. The rest of the cast, the rest of the team are like 20 years my junior. So I did a lot of kind of jumping around the place and kind of affecting, you know, great saves. And then when I look back, I thought, no, I'm just not as good as I thought I was. So, you know, but that's okay.
So you weren't channeling Paddy Bonner or Caelan Gallagher or whatever?
In my head, I was a Paddy Bonner, Caelan Gallagher type, but I realized I was more kind of like Keystone Cops type, you know. But I was, you know, I was trying to say to the director, like, let's do a kind of montage sequence where I dive and the first go it was, I said, let's do some saves and kind of justify this line where I'm brilliant. And she said, okay. And the first person to take a shot was a woman from the American homeless team. And she like beat me from like 30 yards. And I was like, we'll call that one a rehearsal. So it was quite a learning curve. But they're all the teams in the film are the real teams, the real homeless World Cup teams. So Netflix flew all the teams in to play us. So Every team in the film are the real homeless World Cup teams. And they're all like astonishing at football. So it's quite sobering.
That's amazing, actually. Just the fact that they flew them in. Yeah. Did you go?
It was amazing. Yeah.
You filmed it in Rome. Did you bring your family?
We brought our family. It was the only issue was it was like June, July, August. And so we were all baking in the heat, but we were all there. My wife and my children. So we were all there together, but it was, we went for 2 weeks beforehand for a kind of a boot camp training session about choreographing the moves and the different matches and rehearsing the different shots and saves. So it was a real, adventure.
Now, I want to ask you about the Oscars, obviously, but first, Barry Keoghan's success, because, of course, you acted with him, didn't you, Tom, in Love, Hate?
Yes. Yes, Barry, it's very fun. I can very clearly remember first meeting with Barry. I think he must have been, like, maybe 18, 19. Mm. I mean, we were, like, in the fourth season, and he wasn't even in it that much, but I remember the first time meeting him on set, I was like, oh, who's this guy? Because he was so laid back, so self-assured, so unbothered by it, and just a total natural. And you're like, oh, this kid is, this kid's something. And as he has proven to be, and it's an amazing thing to see, it's a wonderful thing.
What about Cillian Murphy? I mean, do we dare to believe he'll win it tonight?
Well, you know, the only problem with awards is that they don't always go to the people who deserve them. Mm. Not always. Let's hope that's the case tonight, that it does go to the person who deserves it, because I think it's an astonishing performance. He's a very, very lovely man. He has done amazing work for decades, and he is representing Ireland, and fingers crossed he can do it.
I mean, you're so successful yourself, Tom, but how do you explain the level of Irish success? Aina Hardwick, I was talking to him recently, a young actor, he made a really good point that it's about talent, but it's also about investment and really hard work in the industry. What do you think?
Well, the thing I think is that basically it's not a surprise, because we've always had amazing acting talent in this country. Like, you can go into like the Abbey, the Gate, Druid, and see like world-class performances from amazing stage actors. So we're always been stacked with this talent. Mm. And I think this is a particular moment where Irish screen actors are really, really thriving. And that comes with like Bow Street, the Lear Academy. So young actors as well don't have to go to England to study, don't have to go to America to study. They stay at home and study in Ireland, and they are local talent. They don't have to leave home and go into a different system of training. And so there's that. But I just think we've always had brilliant actors. So none of this is a surprise to me. I just think it's just the rest of the world now waking up to it.
You joined Marvel, the Marvel world, a few years back. You played Ebony Maw, of course, in two Avengers movies. I think you've a son who's just the right age for Marvel. What do you think, though, about when you hear people saying, Tom, that maybe they're churning out too much material now, that it's created a kind of maybe even fatigue around the franchise?
Well, I suppose all kind of genres have a certain life, a certain shelf life in terms of, like, you know, before Gladiator, people were like, there's, you know, the sword and sandal epic is like over. And then it came and brought that back. And then Robert Downey Jr.'s Iron Man kicked off this huge wave of superhero movies. And I suppose like anything in Hollywood, there are taste things and things come and go. And maybe it's a downturn, but I'm sure it will always come back in the future. So, you know, who knows what the market will bring, but, you know, they keep coming and people enjoy them. And I'm always being asked about it, and kids really love it. And it's a very humbling and very sweet thing to have kids come up and say, oh, I love this film or this particular Marvel character. So it personally, it's lovely. On the grand scale of like where it's going, I don't really know.
You mentioned Robert Downey Jr. there. You worked with him. Yeah. Did you enjoy that experience?
Yeah, he's, you know, he is as charismatic in real life as he is on screen. Again, very generous, very welcoming. You know, he is an astonishing, he's an astonishing actor, but I just found him to be an astonishing man. It's like that, you know, some people have a charisma on screen that when you meet them off stage or off camera, they're quieter or they're, and he just kind of burns with this kind of inherent charisma that is just dazzling. And so it makes you feel so jealous because you're like, oh my God, I kill for like, 10% of that kind of innate charisma he has. But he's just, you know, he's stylish and he's sassy and he's classy. And yeah, he's a real, he's an amazing man.
And as he said, like, he's very generous in his praise for everyone. Yeah. But even for Cillian Murphy recently working with him in Oppenheimer, it's just nice to hear him praise him so much.
Well, I think probably, you know, Cillian is low key in the sense that he is a movie star, but he's also a total artist. So there's a kind of a conflict there in one sense, in the sense that, you know, you get big movie stars who are big, you know, kind of animals, big kind of personalities. Whereas I know Cillian a little bit, and from what I know of him, he is a private, you know, private man, a true artist. And so, you know, I'm sure Robert Downey Jr. was probably maybe didn't know what to make of him, in the sense that, you know, here's this guy who's this incredible talent, but is also very, very quiet, you know, and very, very private.
And of course, Cillian has been given a lot of interviews this weekend. He was talking about they made the decision to come back to live in Ireland, here in Monkstown and Dublin. Yeah. You live in Kent. Do you ever think about that, Tom, about coming back home or not?
I do, and it's very funny. I know a lot of actors who've been here, like 20 Irish actors who've been here 20, 30 years, who are now thinking of going back to Ireland. And I've been here, I'm reaching a very strange milestone that I'm longer in England than I ever was in Ireland, which is a very complicated threshold to cross. And I don't really know what that means. And I'm still trying to wrestle with that about my own identity and my own, like, it's like my kids are half Irish, half English. What do I give them in terms of their Irish legacy? I don't want to force it down their throats, and at the same time, I want them to be proud of where they come from. But I don't want to mix their heads in terms of where do I belong. But I have that own argument in my own soul about where I belong and where I should be. And, you know, I miss Ireland terribly. I love being at home. It still feels like my home, although my home is with my family. So it's a weird mix. And I'm still trying to figure that out. And I don't know what the answer is, and maybe I won't ever know.
Well, meanwhile, your success is great. Tom Vaughan Lawler, Baltimore, the movie, is in cinemas from March the 22nd, and The Beautiful Game will be on Netflix from the 29th. Thanks so much, Tom, for taking the time to speak to us this morning.
Thanks so much, Marion.
Mind yourself. Take care. We'll take a break.